Hey folks, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. I apologize for the horns and the traffic in the background. It gets a little noisy, but traffic is like bumper to bumper here just outside of Washington, D.C. And since I'm driving in every day and driving back every night, I figure it's a good time to talk shop about all things that I'm learning and figuring out in the education space, whether that's from Twitter or from blogs, podcasts, books, books on tape, audiobooks, or just the general presence of education in the world at large. Each week we have about 11 minutes in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and the goal is to give you a bite-sized sort of actionable strategy that you can move into your classroom like today. Nothing too big, nothing too epic, but if you like what you're hearing, certainly hit that subscribe button. We have new episodes every Monday, which is really helpful. Hit that subscribe button because then other people can see the podcast in their favorite podcasting app. And if you like what you're hearing, you can feel free to check out me on Twitter. I'm at MeehanEDU. I'm happy to talk education all week long with anything that comes up for you, things you're interested in. And if you're interested too, I have a website. It's www.adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up about teaching. It's also the name of my book, Adrenaline Rush. So let's connect. I would love to talk more about that. But this week, because it's in honor of the 4th of July week, we just recorded this on the 4th of July week, and the Women's World Cup is this weekend. We have a lot of great things happening that are making us feel very fired up about our country and our nation's history. Talk a little bit about politics and the role it plays in a classroom, or maybe doesn't play in a classroom. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm going to go live with this if I have the guts to hit the send button on Monday. And I don't really know where I stand on what I'm about to say, so I'm going to try to keep it as apolitical as I possibly can, but to kind of raise a conversation, maybe some broader dialogue about what the role of a 21st century classroom educator is when talking about these difficult issues surrounding politics in a very divided time in the American, I guess, political scene. Now, if you're not in the U.S., maybe you don't have these same strictures or these same issues coming up. And I do, full disclosure, I work in a Catholic school, so I am able to talk certainly about faith in the classroom, maybe more so than the average Catholic school or private school educator might be. I'm very grateful for that. It's one of the reasons why I like teaching at a Catholic school, because I like to joke frequently that we don't teach content, rather we teach people. And I think that's the role of all good education. And a big part of who we are as people might be our belief systems or our faith. So as a Catholic school educator, I'm able to talk about my own Catholic faith, which is cool, because it helps inform my understanding of the world as a teacher of English, as a teacher of like reading and writing, philosophy, education. But not today. I don't want to talk really about religion, because ultimately everyone has their own beliefs or lack of beliefs, and that's fine. I'm talking about the role of a teacher in the 21st century when talking about how we talk about politics in the classroom. Certainly as students bring these things up, they raise really sticky situations. But even beyond what students talk about in the classroom, what is the role of a front-facing educator who has, maybe strong opinions or maybe not strong opinions, but like putting a stop to conversations that are getting out of hand? Certainly, I think just as a general best practice, we all can agree that if a conversation takes a political turn in the classroom, we do whatever we can to make sure that people listen with the intent to understand. Making sure that empathy is something that we're practicing, that even if students are very fired up and disagreeing with one another, they're never doing it in a way that's hurtful, that they're at least attempting to hear what the other side is doing and like make an honest effort to just validate their understanding, not necessarily to condone their worldview, but just to say, okay, so I'm hearing what you're saying, and what you're saying is X, Y, and Z. Am I getting that right? Okay. Is there more to what you're saying? Just so I can kind of understand. It's very Brene Brown, right? The empathy thing. Like, hey, the story I'm making up in my head is X. Where am I getting the story wrong? Just to kind of help put on the skin of somebody else and to see if you could see for a moment the world from his or her perspective. And empathy mapping is a great tool for that. In the book Educated by Design, Michael Cohen, who is a rabbi, does a great job of laying out the empathy map concept, which is not unique to education, but it is a very handy strategy to get in the side or the head of space of someone who is not you. But I say all of that to say, I think that's just general like background noise we all can agree about, what best practices look like. But this week I got sucked into an argument on Facebook, and I know I shouldn't do that because I realize that's no one ever wins on Facebook, right? I think the Facebook is not unlike people who put bumper stickers on their cars. Very rarely do people actually get into Facebook to have a serious discourse and to like change someone's mind. A lot of it's just kind of tribalism and virtue signaling, letting people know, hey, I'm here with you, and we stand united in whatever the cause is, whether it's very right wing, very left wing. Very apolitical, very controversial, whatever it is. And people come to have their opinions validated, not really to have conversation. We know about that with the 2016 election. The conversations about, you know, Russia interference and fake news articles, you know, things that are pretty much just telling you what you want to hear in an echo chamber. And I think that, generally speaking, as a life, you know, precept, I've tried to stay off of Facebook specifically for that reason. Someone told me one time that Facebook is where everyone you used to know is, and Twitter is everyone where you want to know is. And I like that. Twitter is a great place for connecting, sort of building a Rolodex, building a professional network, connecting and talking to people who are writing and educating and researching and presenting at conferences, and that's super, super cool. But Facebook is like people who you used to go to high school with, or maybe relatives, or, you know, friends of friends who you had one time third period science with, you know, back in your junior year of college. And whatever that's worth or whatever it's not worth, you're connecting with people who you might never actually see ever again. You just happen to have known them. And in truth, maybe if you had a chance to connect with them today, maybe you wouldn't be so friendly with them, especially with some of those behaviors or those conversations. And again, that's part of, you know, where you go in life, right? You're in life, you meet with people, and then you leave. And when you leave, you go wherever you go to college to, and you see the world, you move in your career. But other people move in different directions or stay put. And some of these conversations feel like they're very, oh, right, that's why I left, right? That whole attitude of, like, those awkward family dinners. But without getting too much into the nitty-gritty of the politics, because I'm trying to be pretty apolitical in this conversation when talking about politics, which is chancy, I got into an argument on Facebook this week, and I don't really know where I stand on it. So I'm if I have the guts to hit the publish button this week, I wanted to share this sort of as open conversation with educators and just start a dialogue about, you know, where the role of a 21st century educator is when it comes to having, you know, civil discourse in social media. Someone had said on the heels of, I guess, Nike recently pulled a sneaker because they had used the Betsy Ross flag. And there was a thread going on about that. And I didn't have a particularly strong feeling one way or another about the actual pulling of the shoe, whether Colin Kaepernick is right or wrong for making the statement that he's made, or whether the folks who were upset have a right to make. I didn't really want to get into that too much. But I did see someone say in response to that thread, and this is on a wall of a mutual friend, they said about race and racism and protests and, you know, boycotts and blah, 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 blah. They said, quote, the NFL is 70% racist. I'm sorry, 70% black. Isn't that racist? And I was like, I don't know what to say about that. Like, I feel like that can't go unchecked. Like, it feels like a flag on the play is required, right? Like, at best, that person has a pronounced misunderstanding of what textbook racism is. Like, no, it's a performance-based league, right? You can't call that racist if 70% of the people who are playing are the best in the country at that skill, and they just happen to be one race or another. That's not racism. So at best, it's like a gross misunderstanding of the very term in question. At worst, it felt like it was an attempt to kind of obfuscate and maybe, you know, like, be a little bit more damaging and maybe even low-key racist about what that person's deeper held beliefs were. And so I said as much. I was like, hey, you can't seriously be, you're not seriously comparing X and Y, right? Because they're two totally different things, like the blinky face emoji, right? Like, what's going on? But I had a colleague or a friend send me a message and say, hey, I want to caution you about getting involved in these conversations on Facebook. I don't think it's the place of an educator to be in these conversations. You know, if that's the parent or a relative of a student who you might teach in your classroom, you might have compromised your ability to reach that student if you become embroiled in these fights. I thought about it and I'm like, you know, I don't really know where I stand on this. I try to pick my battles. I'm a loudmouth kid from New Jersey, so I know how to fight on the internet. And I'm not too good at, like, team sports, so I was really good at arguing on internet forums for a really long time. Through high school, into college, and even afterwards. So I'm in to, like, have a fight when I'm ready to have a fight. But I kind of pick my spots, and, you know, with age comes a little bit of wisdom and, like, discretion. It's like, it's not worth it picking a fight. But I was just, like, aghast at this conversation because it just felt so wrong-minded, so, like, off the money. And I was like, I don't think I'd be too ashamed to say to any kid in my classroom, hey, you can't compare those two things and try to pass that off as, like, a fair argument, because it's not. And I think about the role of a 21st century educator, like, where is that line? Because as we make arguments in our classroom for anything, you know, even that which we choose to teach, is by nature political, because it's taking a stand that that which we are teaching is worth saying, and that which we are not teaching is somehow not worth saying. So, like, if you're an English teacher and you teach, quote, the canon, right, you have a lot of old dead white guys. In so doing, you marginalize a lot of voices that might not be old or dead or white or guys. And I don't know that that's necessarily a great thing. And I'm trying to, you know, speak to a more culturally responsive and respectful curriculum, while at the same time not becoming openly and flagrantly political. I think about the movie American History X, which is a master class in race and racial study, with Ed Norton is in it, and it's super, super good. But it's really controversial, right? Because it's about a neo-Nazi who reforms himself in prison, and it w is witness to a very violent hate crime before going, and then as he returns back from prison, in an attempt to kind of like get his life right, there's a flashback sequence where the dad character, who actually I think is the same dad who played the dad in Boy Meets World, says to Ed Norton's character as he's a teenager, he's like, "Why are you reading black books? Why do we stop replacing good books with black books?" You know, he's sort of, you know, angling against the teacher who's made a decision to teach X instead of Y. And I think about that in my classroom because, you know, if teaching is inherently a political act, as we stand up there in our classrooms and do any presentations that we do, even by, you know, not saying something, we kind of are saying something. And I don't want to be so dramatic as to like take it to the extreme, but I'm reminded of that quote that says, you know, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good men and women to do nothing. Like, if we see something going on and we don't say something about it, like, how much do we just allow that to go on? Whether it's in the faculty lounge or in social media or, you know, in passing conversations in the hallways or in the classrooms, like, is it the role of a just and rightly formed society to maybe call people out on their stuff, and not be afraid to lose your job for, you know, having said that thing? And I'm not saying to be openly, flagrantly, like, upsetting to people and trying to pick fights. No, certainly not. What I'm saying rather is, like, where do we draw that line for ourselves so that we know that we're giving our students the absolute best and most safe learning environment that we can, so that they can feel comfortable saying, "Hey, what I'm hearing here isn't really jiving with my ears, and I want to know the truth, but I don't want to be afraid to be like, you know, shamed or blamed because I've had the audacity to challenge a point." And I'm just trying to figure out where that role is as a 21st century teacher, because certainly as a child brings up things in the classroom about politics, like, we can engage or not engage and sort of, you know, move the conversation sideways and left and right as we need to. But sometimes stuff just happens. And when it happens, it feels like it would be almost like unjust to not say something about it. And maybe that's extreme, but that's something that I feel like I want to, you know, bring into the conversation because I don't know how I feel about it. Like, what is the role of a classroom today when we feel maybe there's some things we just have to keep addressing? Otherwise, they just go unchecked, and then what happens? So that's kind of where my head is this week, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Like I said, more questions than answers this week, but I think that sometimes is a good thing. I don't pretend on these podcasts to know all of the answers. I just want to share dialogue and really start conversations going about ways that we could ultimately make better classrooms for every kid that we're teaching, whether they're you know, left, right of center, or anything like that. My goal is not to raise little Republicans, or little Democrats, or little Libertarians, or Tea Party kids. My goal is to raise thinkers and people who are, you know, culturally sensitive, who are thoughtful and kind. And if that's a goal of a 21st century educator, then where do we draw the line? So I'd love to hear your thoughts. On this week, I'm at MeehanEDU on Twitter, or you can hit me up on my website, adrenalinerush.com. Thanks so much. I hope it was not too terribly offensive. I try to keep it middle of the road, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. So thanks again, and we'll be back next week with more.